and welcome to Health Fact versus Fiction, brought to you by HCA Healthcare UK. I'm Anna Richardson, and this is the podcast where we uncover the truths and bust the myths about your health with some of the country's leading consultants. We're talking about women's intimate health. This is, as the episode title suggests, Vagina Chat. We'll discuss common problems, how to stay healthy, and later on, Loose Women star Andrew McLean is joining me to talk about her experience of the menopause. With me throughout this episode is Shazia Malik, who is a consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist at the Portland Hospital in London. Hello, Shazia.
Hello, Anna.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm delighted to be here with you.
So, Shazia, in this podcast, we see it as our role to try and bust some myths. Are you ready for this?
Absolutely.
This is going to be really embarrassing if you get this wrong.
Well, it feels a bit like Mastermind.
Okay, we need the music, don't
yes.
we? Dun, 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 dun. So, I'd like you to tell me whether the following is health fact or health fiction. Number one, neither soap nor water is needed to keep the inside of your vagina clean. Fact or fiction?
Absolute fiction. You don't need anything to clean inside your vagina. You only need to clean on the outside.
No way!
Absolutely. In fact, putting things inside your vagina that aren't meant to be there or aren't needed can actually upset the balance of the good, healthy bacteria and cause more harm than good.
Okay. Vaginal discharge is common and normal. Fact or fiction?
So it's true, it's very common, and it's mostly normal. The key for women is to realise when it becomes abnormal.
There is a high chance that hormone replacement therapy will give you cancer. Fact or fiction?
Again, fiction. There is a very small chance it may contribute to certain cancers, but the chance is small, and all the latest data shows that it's probably smaller than we originally thought.
We are going to delve into all of those topics later on. But first of all, let's just start talking more about vaginal awareness. How do we keep our vaginas and indeed our vulvas healthy and that whole area?
So there are several things one can do to keep yourself healthy. I think the first thing is to look at your overall health. So are you stressed? Have you been eating healthily? Are you sleeping enough? Are you drinking enough water? Are you gorging on carbohydrates?
So yes, diet, yes, yes, yes and yes.
Diet, exercise, self-care, reducing stress, all sorts of things. So, you know, all bits of our body reflect how we are as a whole. So it's important to look at yourself as a whole and take care of yourself as a whole. I think the other thing is to understand that, you know, you should let yourself be free. So I spend a lot of my time, especially with patients who come with discharge or recurrent thrush, telling them that you don't wear panties at night. Again, something you're taught as a youngster, to wear panties at night. But why do we need panties at night? We don't. Do we? And in fact, you don't want to wear panties at night. You need to let yourself breathe. And remember that the opening of your vagina is very near the opening of your back passage as well. So it's about how you wash, always front to back, making sure that you're clean, changing your panties very often, wearing cotton underwear. And the other thing that I'm always telling people is you wash your underwear separate to your other clothes at a high temperature, so around 80 or 90 degrees, because that's what kills. There's a fungus called Candida which causes thrush. And if you just wash it at 40 degrees with your other clothes, it won't be killed on your panties. So it's really important. Don't wear panties at night. Wash them separately. Wear cotton. Try not to wear nylon, which makes you sweat more and will give you more germs that way because you're more sweaty. Vaginal douching is really not necessary, as we discussed at the beginning. In fact, leave your vagina alone to do its job. It's a self-cleaning organism. Okay? And if you've got discharge, which is normal for you, then just wash yourself, you know, two or three times a day with warm water. Pat it dry. Don't use scented products. Remember, sitting in long hot baths can really aggravate infections. All that soapy stuff and the oil can get inside the vagina. That can affect the healthy bacteria. All these things.
You are telling... I mean, I used to present a show about sex education.
Yeah.
And I like to think that as a woman of 48 that has a vagina and loves her vagina, I know a great deal about vaginas, and yet I didn't know that you should be washing your knickers at 90 degrees.
I say 90, I suspect 70 but it's still very hot.
Yes. And washing them separately from the rest of your clothes.
Yes, because you won't kill. And in fact, that's why we wash bedding at 60 degrees, because different germs can get onto your bedding as well. So remember that anything that is in touch with your intimate parts, if you want to kill germs and bugs, you need to wash it at a higher temperature.
That's really interesting, because presumably then, not that I suppose many people do, but they may do, don't share your underwear. So I'm thinking in same-sex relationships or mother-daughter relationships.
Yes, never share your underwear and change it regularly. So just because it's come out of the wash looking fine, you know, if it's had its day, then throw it away and get some new underwear.
Stay with me, Shazia, because I want to talk about something that you, me and my next guest are really passionate about. About one third of the female population is currently either peri or postmenopausal. It's the big M. It's a period of our lives that can last up to 15 years extraordinarily. So why aren't we talking about the menopause more? That's what our next guest has chosen to do brilliantly. Television presenter Andrea McLean started her menopause at the tender age of 43 after undergoing a hysterectomy. She's now decided to write a book all about her experience called Confessions of a Menopausal Woman, which is doing fantastically well. Andrea, you've been very candid and open about going through the menopause. I mean, you experienced it really quite early. Just take us through what happened.
Well, my symptoms first started actually when I was 37. So I was very young. And they sort of manifested themselves in night sweats, generally starting to feel not like myself. I wasn't alarmed by this, though, because my mum started going through the menopause when she was 40. So it was something that I was aware of might start to happen quite early. I then unexpectedly got pregnant at 37, which is unusual but not unheard of. I've been told since then that actually, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you can have actually a last sort of rush of hormones rather than them just falling off. And considering I'd had to have fertility treatment to get pregnant years before with my son, it took me completely by surprise, a lovely surprise. My daughter is now nearly 12. So once obviously I'd fallen pregnant, had the baby, it took a little while for the normal hormonal imbalance that would happen after pregnancy to settle in. My menopause kicked in earnest, I would say, at 42. And that was when, again, the night sweats returned. At that point, I was going through a divorce. It was very difficult to sort of understand whether the stress, anxiety, depression, mood swings and everything, is that to do with the relationship issues that I was going through and an extremely stressful period in my life, or whether it was a biological thing. But I've always kind of kept track of my body and mind and how I feel in myself. And I was able to sort of step back and think, no, this is definitely not to do with that. So I took myself off, had some hormone tests done, and was told, yes, you are now perimenopausal.
No, I mean, just listening to that story, It's shocking, and it's also understandably confusing, because when you were 37, you're going through your night sweats, you're going through all these changes, and then suddenly you get pregnant. So that's a very confusing state of affairs, because you're perimenopausal and yet getting pregnant. So you must have been incredibly confused at 37, thinking, what on earth is going on?
I know. That's a conversation for a bottle of wine.
Right.
It really is. It was quite a, shall we say, quite a tumultuous time.
Was it?
In my life, yeah, for lots of other reasons. There was a whole lot of other stuff going on at the same time.
But then when you went back into your perimenopausal state post the birth of your daughter and going more into your 40s, were you able to then really recognise that, hang on a minute. I mean, did you think, oh, my God, is this the menopause?
Do you know, I didn't think, oh, my God, is this the menopause? I just thought, right, this is the menopause. Because, like I say, my mum went through it so early. And I can remember really clearly when my mum was, she was 40. And my mum's quite a steady Eddie. I'm very like my mum. We're very kind of even-tempered. We're very good at sort of holding things in, not necessarily the best solution, but, you know, we're instinctively polite, you know, so we don't sort of explode at the smallest thing. And my mum was, she was ratty, she was irritable, she was exploding, like I say, over the smallest thing. She was not being herself. And I can remember one day we were driving in the car and mum was raging about something, which was really not like her at all. And my sister and I were sort of sitting in the back seat of the car thinking, whoa, what's going on? And I remember my dad pulled over, and he's a very typical gruff Scottish man. And my mum was glaring out the window and refusing to speak to any of us. And my dad turned round and just looked at us in the back seat and said, "Girls, your mum's going through the change. We're all going to need to be patient." And my sister and I sort of nodded at him. And then he carried on driving and we looked at each other. We had no idea what this change was. And it was the 80s. And I remember Teen Wolf was out. And I remember being slightly alarmed, thinking, what is this change? And what is my mum turning into? Obviously, then it became clearer through conversation that it was something that women go through. We didn't know the word menopause. We just knew that at about this age, women will start to go through some sort of hormonal change and their behaviour will, you know, be a bit all over the place. My mum told me later that actually she had gone to the doctors, a male doctor, I have to say, who had told her, "Rubbish, you're too young and it's just obviously something that your body's going through at the moment. You're just going to have to deal with it." Which is horrifying now. Like I say, this was in the 80s. We then actually moved house. We moved to a different area and she had a female GP. She went to meet her, had a conversation. Within a week was on HRT. Gosh. And it completely changed my mum's life.
So clearly you and your mum and your sister have been open about this. You've talked about this. So do you feel that when you were going through perimenopause in your early 40s, that you were prepared? You understood?
I knew what it was, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I was prepared, I would say, more mentally for what was going to happen to me. Physically, I'd got my head around that. It would be that my body would start to change and feel slightly different. In terms of the normal symptoms, I've had endometriosis since my 20s, and it was something that, again, I struggled to get diagnosed. I ended up having a laparoscopy when I was 28 and found that basically I only had one functioning fallopian tube. I also had cysts on my ovaries, yeah, plus extreme endometriosis. So I ended up having a Marina coil fitted to help with my endometriosis. So in terms of my menopausal symptoms, I wasn't having any periods because of the coil. So everything else was sort of physically, it was the night sweats, then it became day sweats, then it became literally sweating buckets while I'm at work. It was pouring down my back, the back of my neck. It was appearing out of nowhere. Those were my sort of classic symptoms that I was prepared for. What I wasn't prepared for, and I think this is something that I hadn't necessarily spoken about with my mum, was the mental side of it. And that's actually where I massively struggled. Mentally, I fell off a cliff. I became extremely anxious. I've always experienced anxiety. It's something that is normal, if you like, for me. And I understand when feelings are approaching, and I try and do my best to sort of overcome them. It's like the difference between boogie boarding in Cornwall and going to Hawaii. The size of the waves of anxiety were huge.
Did you feel like you were going mad?
Yes. Yeah, I did. And there was a huge loss of sense of self. Who am I anymore? I became very low. I would say we all have a kind of base level of our mood. We kind of know where we are. And I fully embrace the fact that we cannot be happy all the time. That, you know, that's an unreal expectation for any of us to put upon ourselves. But my base level of mood had dropped significantly, so that I was low all the time. I was just functioning, rather than I'd lost any kind of joy. Dealing with normal day-to-day things. By the time I was going through this, I was a single mum. So that in itself brings its own challenges and its own sort of stresses. But I'm quite a resilient sort of character, and I am a sort of pull your socks up and get on with it sort of person. But I couldn't. Mm. I pretended for quite a long time, and I was what I I'm pleased with is I've managed to, I hope, this is a discussion I'll have with my kids in their 20s, disguise most of it from my kids. And once they're in bed, then you sort of let go and you, like I say, that the feelings come, you get into bed, you can't sleep, you're lying in bed thinking of all the terrible mistakes you've made during the day and what a mess you're going to make of tomorrow and all this sort of thing. It was then that I took myself to my GP, who, funnily enough, it was to do with my Marina Coyle, who then recommended me to a specialist. And she was the one who said, I think you definitely need to go onto HRT. And that changed everything.
Ah, OK. Well, I'm going to pull Shazia back into this because I've experienced exactly the same thing that Andrea's talking about. So a complete loss of confidence, absolutely no energy, severe anxiety, just not at all the women that we were in our 20s and 30s. And you do feel as though you're going mad as well. I want to know, as an expert, what on earth is going on, just physically, biologically, what's happening during this time?
So what's happening is that your store of eggs has become almost nothing, and your ovaries aren't releasing the hormones that you need. Most of the symptoms that women have around the menopause is the drop in estrogen levels. So estrogen is the key. We give women progesterone as well if they have a uterus to protect the lining of their womb from the estrogen that we give them back. But that's what makes us feel like women. And, you know, it helps our skin, our hair, our vaginal health, all sorts of things. So it's the drop in estrogen levels that gives us, affects our blood vessels. So it gives us the flushes, affects the temperature control in the brain. But estrogen has a role in the brain as well. And so when these levels drop, this is where you get the classic brain fog that happens to women in the perimenopause, and then it affects your memory as well. It doesn't mean you're getting dementia or Alzheimer's, but it's quite frightening. So the menopause can be really frightening, and it's not just the physical symptoms. And some of how you feel may not be as a consequence of the changes in your hormones, but of course it's a key consequence of how we see ourselves as women and how our changing roles in life and how our changing roles and appearance to other people might be. So as we were discussing earlier, it's about, you know, the loss of your reproductive health. You know, the menopause means you have to accept that you're not going to have more children. It also means that you may have seen your friends or your mother suddenly have become invisible and you're worried that's going to happen to you. It also means, you know, that you think about the future of your relationship and how the fact that you suddenly have to accept that you're getting older, because the menopause is an inarguable a landmark in the life of a woman, that you're moving from one stage of your reproductive life to another. And that is a massive thing for us to deal with.
So massive question for me is, when does this stop? Because I think one thing that worries me is, if it affects your sex life, if it affects your memory and brain fog, does that mean that I'm going to have brain fog for the rest of my life?
No, it doesn't. And so the average age of the menopause in this country or in the West is around 51. So, Andrea, you were very young. What we call a premature menopause is certainly if you go through the menopause before the age of 40, or even probably between the age of 40 and 45, you are diagnosed as having what we call premature menopause. After 45, it's probably within the realms of normal, although the average is 51. How long it takes is different for every woman, and how it affects you or doesn't affect you is different for every woman. So there are some very lucky people who may sail through it with the odd hot flush and sweat.
I hate them.
And really, you know, they don't know something's happened apart from the fact that their periods have stopped, which they celebrate. Yeah. So the diagnosis of the menopause itself is actually what we call a retrospective diagnosis. It means that you've stopped your periods for at least a year.
Can I ask you something as well? Yes. Obviously, I'd been through all of these experiences and then I had a hysterectomy. That changes everything because it brings on an absolute immediate menopause.
And this is a well-recognised thing. So even if your ovaries aren't removed during a hysterectomy...
I had everything.
So you had a total hysterectomy, which means that you've suddenly gone cold turkey.
That's exactly what it felt like.
And it's really quite awful.
Yes.
And it's something that should be discussed before women have that procedure, and a plan should be made so that she's given hormones before she goes home, as long as they're not contraindicated. So, of course, for every woman, if we're giving you a drug, we need to make sure that it's safe and that the risks of giving it don't outweigh the benefits to you. Mm. So if somebody listening to this is about to have a hysterectomy and she knows her ovaries are going to be taken as well, then she needs to be having that discussion with her gynecologist about the likely symptoms that she's going to feel and how that's going to be managed for her. It's critical. If you have a hysterectomy and we leave your ovaries behind, because we're affecting the blood supply to your ovaries, then we know that that will bring the menopause forward by at least a couple of years to what you might have undergone if you hadn't had that hysterectomy. So that also should be discussed. Mm. So there are different groups of women, women who go through a natural menopause, women who everything is taken, women whose ovaries are left behind, or women, and the other group of women we should mention, because these are often young women, are women who are being treated for cancer. Yeah. And they will go through a premature menopause because of their treatment. And some of those women, especially if they've had breast cancer, may not be able to have HRT. And then that's a whole different ballgame, and they really need to sit down with their breast surgeon and a specialist.
Please give me some hope here, Shazia. When will the feelings stop? So, again, I think that this is my question. Whether you have HRT, whether you don't have HRT, at what point do we start to feel fine again? And is that possible? Because what we're saying is your estrogen drops and that's what's causing all of these symptoms.
Yeah.
So do we ever get our energy back? Do we get our sex life back? What happens?
So we do. So your estrogen, if you're going through a natural menopause, doesn't drop all of a sudden. It's not like Andrew's situation. So what happens throughout your 40s is that your hormones fluctuate. And so some months you may have symptoms and other months you'll be absolutely fine. And there is always light at the end of the tunnel and we all get through it. I think the key thing, though, is how you manage your transition. And that is where we go back to looking at the whole woman, looking at, you know, are your vitamin D levels appropriate? Is your weight normal? Are you exercising? Have you cut your alcohol and smoking? Are your relationships healthy? How do you feel about yourself? So there's a big drive now on something called CBT. It's a form of psychotherapy, and it's been shown to be really helpful to women to get through that transitional period.
So to be absolutely clear, it's the fluctuation of hormones, not the cessation of the hormones, it's the fluctuation.
So the cessation of hormones is what brings you to your final period, and you look back and think, that was the age I went through the menopause. But the symptoms that you get will be for several years, and that's the fluctuations. And you're likely to have more symptoms in the months where your estrogen levels are lower, and that's when your periods may start to become less frequent. But of course, our fluctuations in progesterone can affect us in different ways as well. So we know that women in their 40s are probably more likely to get PMS-type symptoms, and that's why you also need to look at, you know, things like oil of evening primrose, acupuncture, cutting processed food, caffeine, stress, all that kind of stuff. It all comes into play to help you handle your 40s and 50s.
Well, I'm going to come back. I mean, this is so depressing. I'm coming back to Andrea here that with the book. I mean, you know, you and I were chatting when we were getting our makeup done as well. Let's talk about weight. I've turned into a breeze block.
No, you haven't.
What's going on?
But you feel like you have, because I think we all have our own sense of normality in terms of we know the weight we like to be, we know the weight we normally are. And for me, I put on a stone. And I was lucky, I kind of put it on very evenly all over, so I managed to hide it. But I know it's there. And it is a horrible feeling. And it just sort of crept on. And I definitely don't have... I'm normally a sort of Duracell bunny. I can keep going and going and going and going until I smash into a wall and can't go anymore. I smash into walls a lot more regularly now. I sort of run out of energy. It's... I don't know. What can you do?
So, but you're evangelical, aren't you, about diet and exercise during this time? So what do you do?
I'm an evangelist who lapses every now and again. Yes, I 100% know the benefits. When I was writing the book, it was something that I looked into in terms of when I was building up to have my hysterectomy. What can I do to make sure that this is as easier transition as possible? So I looked at what I'm putting in my body and what I'm doing with my body to make sure that once I'd had the operation, I was in peak physical health. That was great because I was so incredibly focused. But real life isn't like that. And once you sort of do find yourself back on your feet again, yes, I'm down to one cup of coffee a day. I do watch what I eat and I do try and exercise. I do still like my glass of wine in the evening.
Is that okay,
Is that
Shazia?
Okay? Please say yes.
Is it absolutely fine as long as it's within the limits of what is healthy? I think one thing to be conscious of is that as we get older, we know that alcohol intake is associated with a higher risk of breast cancer. So you really have to be careful how much you have. You know, with modern life, it's very stressful. Juggling so many balls, aren't we? Mm. And it's really easy to have that second or third glass of wine. And all I would say to people is count up how many units you're having a week and minimise it as much as possible.
So you're still enjoying a glass of wine, Andrea, as am I. Mm. Diet and exercise, very, very important.
Yeah.
Can we talk about sex?
We must talk about sex.
When's our sex drive going to come back, Shazia? I mean, I include everybody around the table in this. I mean, maybe it's just me. But I think what's interesting during perimenopause is one's libido just absolutely crashes. Does it come back?
As I keep saying, it's different for every woman, but yes, it does. And as we discussed earlier, a woman's libido is such a complex beast, you know, and there's so many different things that feed into our libido that just relying on sorting out our hormones may not always be the thing that you need. You know, looking at your relationships, what turns you on, so many different things, how you feel about the menopause as yourself, as a woman, your general health, these will all feed into your libido. But there are hormones that we can give to help people, and it's not just your libido. So the male hormone testosterone is what helps us with our libido, but what it also helps you with and what you also lose around the menopause is your energy. And, you know, these muscle aches and pains and just feeling tired all the time. So it can be really helpful to see an expert who can help you with that. But at the same time, make sure you're not anemic, your thyroid isn't underactive, you're not low on vitamin D, and you're not diabetic, because all these things will also affect how tired you are, how miserable you feel, how achy you are. And inevitably, that's going to affect whether you want to make love or not.
Absolutely. Can we just go back to HRT? Because you mentioned that earlier, Shazia, and the fact that there's been so many scare stories about it. Is it safe?
Yes, it is, for the majority of women. It really is. And not only is it safe, but it can be life-changing.
So you would recommend it to your patients if they're appropriate?
Absolutely. As long as they're aware of all the facts, all the pros and cons, and the small risks of, or the very small increased risk of breast cancer with it. As long as you've gone through all of that and you as a specialist feel it's safe and the patient feels that it would be beneficial, then I'm all for it.
Andrea, are you on HRT?
I am, yes. I'm on estrogen gel, progesterone tablets, and also pessaries as well, estrogen pessaries as well.
Okay.
And I think that...
You can have an estrogen ring for the vagina.
What's
it makes life
ring?
A lot easier than pessaries or cream.
No.
So it's a bit like, you know, the pill, you can now get a contraceptive ring. It's just a small, rubbery, flexible ring.
Yeah.
And you insert it into the vagina and you leave it there for quite some time, several months, and it gives you a continuous dose of vagina.
That would be amazing.
I say that here.
It gives you,
continuous dose of estrogen acting directly on the walls of your vagina, because that's what makes sex uncomfortable, yeah, is the lower levels of estrogen in your tissues, in your skin and your vagina. And that makes sex uncomfortable. It affects lubrication. And so we can deal with that either with pessaries or cream, but you have to insert those, yeah, yourself. It can be messy, puts you off having sex, actually. Whereas this ring is an amazing thing. You leave it there for several months, you know, and it releases it at a gradual rate. And it's very, very effective.
I did not know that.
I did not know that.
Speak to your specialist about it.
I will. I'll have a little. Yeah. Right, I'm going to be on the phone. I want a ring.
Yeah, give me the ring. It kind of feels as though we should be discussing this, the menopause and perimenopause, throughout women's lives rather than just now, and you know, in our 40s, doesn't it? It feels like it's a really neglected subject. Would you agree with that?
I agree. And also, I think it's a dreaded subject. So by perpetually saying it's really awful and, you know, it makes your life miserable, then of course we don't want to talk about it. So yes, it may be awful or it may be briefly awful, but it may not be. But the key thing is it's inevitable. And if it's inevitable, then of course we need to plan for it. We need to talk about it. We need to not be scared of it. And even the government have at last cottoned on to the fact that it affects women's workplaces. And as we are becoming an older population, more and more of us are going to be menopausal and working. And so even the government have now brought out guidelines on the fact that employers need to be aware of what women are going through and to adjust their work patterns and their work environment.
Do you think that employers are aware of this, Andrea? Have you ever come across a sort of a boss that's gone, now, Andrea, I know you might be feeling a little bit foggy this morning because of the big M. Do you think that they're aware of it?
Well, I'm very lucky that obviously I work in a very female-orientated environment. So it's something that we are encouraged to talk about and are very open about. But I think it's really interesting what you say in terms of we tend to look at the menopause as incredibly negative thing, and that's understandable because it's difficult, it's challenging, and everything that we've just spoken about now. But going back to my dad leaning over in the back seat and what going through the change.
What a great man, by the way.
Yeah, that was probably the most feminist thing he's ever done in his life. But I actually see that if we can turn this on its head, and this is something I'm really keen to do, make it a change for good. And this is something, I've got a website called This Girl Is On Fire, and the reason I came up with the title was because, A, we're menopausal, we are all burning up. But also, the change can be that you can find your fire again. You can get the fire in your belly, but in a really good way. And actually, this look at it as an opportunity to step back and think, am I eating the right things? Am I exercising? Am I going to my doctor and being fully honest about how I'm actually feeling? Rather than putting up with it, only going to the GP because my kid's got a stub toe or my husband, you know, put ourselves first. For the first time.
And it's freedom from periods and contraception.
It could be a whole new start in life rather than the end. Rather than seeing the menopause as a time where your life comes to an end, try and see it as a time where it's just beginning. Because we're coming into the menopause now in our middle years, and our middle years should be our most enriching and our best time because we've got all this experience. Can't remember it because we're so full of brain fog. But we've got all this experience, all this talent, and eventually we will have all this energy once we've looked into everything that we need to do. So for me, it's about turning it all on its head and sort of reclaiming it. And that starts with talking about it.
You've had a tremendous response to Confessions of a Menopausal Woman. What kind of women, what have women been saying to you?
It's been amazing. What's been so wonderful is I started writing the book because I was outed on national TV as having a hysterectomy. I didn't want to talk about it. It was my business. It was personal. It ended up that I had to talk about it. And I went home thinking, no, everyone's going to think I'm old. You know, future employers will think I'm past it. You know, I work in the media, you know, and no one's going to want this crumbly old woman. And then basically, I was greeted with this tsunami of response from women who wanted to know what my experience was like. What was I doing? How was I getting through it? And I had 10,000 women got in touch in 24 hours, just in the time it took me to announce that I was going to have my hysterectomy. And I realized I was looking at it totally back to front. And that if someone like me, who was in the public eye, felt, oh, I'm old and I don't want to talk about it. God help anyone else who isn't given the platform that I am. So I completely flipped round my way of thinking. And now I basically challenge everybody to talk about it. With the book, the feedback that I'm getting is lots of hugging. There is a lot of hugging in the street, which I love. I'm getting so many women coming up to me and saying, because of you, I went to see my GP. Because of you, I realized I'm not going mad. Because of your book, I realized I don't have dementia. Because of you, I've now gone and seen my GP. I've taken measures, and my husband and I are having sex again. I got stopped just last week by this wonderful couple, and she literally was like, oh my God, it's you. I read your book. I went to my doctors. I'm now on HRT. I feel like myself again. And her husband came over and said, thank you for giving me my wife back. And the three of us cried. And that's the kind of response that I'm getting.
It's
purely
huge.
By talking about it. And I now realize that actually it was the best. You can turn anything around and make it the best thing that's ever happened to you. And for me, I'm on a mission to make women feel better about themselves.
So what one thing would you both say to a listener who thinks that the menopause may be upon them? And I include men in that as well. What one thing would you say?
For me, I would get a journal and start writing things down, because it's really difficult. If you go to your GP and say, I'm feeling a bit meh, I'm just feeling a bit like this, doctors need something a bit more concrete to go on. So buy yourself a nice diary, buy yourself a rubbish diary, just jot it down and try and make a note of how you're feeling on what day and exactly what that means physically, mentally, emotionally, everything, so that you have some kind of back catalogue to refer to when you go to your GP and say, this is my baseline, and it's now not normal. I don't know if that makes sense to you as a doctor.
It makes absolute sense. But I think also, as a woman, know what it is you want and where it is you want to be. Because, of course, not all women want HRT or can take it. So that's the key thing is, you know, what am I going through? What do I want? What are my beliefs? What is it I aspire to? And then take it from there.
Andrew McLean and Shazia Malik, thank you both very much. And if you want more information on what we've talked about in this episode, go to the show notes, which you'll find at hcahealthcare.co.uk/podcast. And when you're there, just click on the name of the episode, Vagina Chat and the Big M. Why not click subscribe on your podcast app to get future episodes for free, downloaded onto your phone when they're released? And while you're there, if you could also take a second to rate us or leave a review, that would A, be really kind, and it'll help others find the podcast more easily. Health, Fact versus Fiction is presented by me, Anna Richardson, and is a Bengo Media production for HCA Healthcare UK.